This is certainly one of the strangest stories in the entire Bible. A prophet sees a woman named Wickedness sitting in a basket. Two stork-like women lift up the basket and carry it away. What in the world is going on? Do you want to understand the Bible, but you're confused? You've come to the right place. This is Tough Bible Questions on Timothy Talks, where I'm going to work through answers to your questions about the tough, challenging, and sometimes flat-out weird sections of the Bible. I'm so glad that you're joining me today. I've been delving into the strangest, hardest, and most challenging Bible questions. Today I'm going to take one up that might possibly win the award for the most weird or the most confusing Bible passage. I'm talking about Zechariah 5, verses 5 through 11. As usual, my name is Daniel Pentamone, and I'm the host for today's show on Timothy Talks. You may be wondering what I'm talking about. Well, let me begin by reading to you this passage, and you'll quickly see just how strange this passage is. Again, this is found in the book of Zechariah in the Old Testament, verses 5 through 11. Then the angel who talked with me came forward and said to me, "Lift your eyes and see what this is that is going out." And I said, "What is it?" He said, "This is the basket that is going out." And he said, "This is their iniquity in all the land." And behold, the leaden cover was lifted, and there was a woman sitting in the basket. And he said, "This is wickedness." And he thrust her back into the basket and thrust down the leaden weight on its opening. Then I lifted my eyes and saw, and behold, two women coming forward. The wind was in their wings. They had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the basket between earth and heaven. Then I said to the angel who talked with me, "Where are they taking the basket?" He said to me, "To the land of Shinar, to build a house for it. And when this is prepared, they will set the basket down there on its base." So let's start by, in order to understand this passage, start by talking about the book of Zechariah, to understand a little bit about what is going on. The book of Zechariah is the second to last Old Testament Bible book. So just find the New Testament, go back two books, and you'll be in the book of Zechariah. It's 14 chapters long, and it's about the visions and the prophecies of Zechariah. He has many strange visions, but Zechariah begins somewhere around the year 520 and onward, after the return from Babylon. I've talked before about how the kingdom of Judah is taken captive by the Babylonians. They're carted off to Babylon. But eventually, a new king comes to power. His name is Cyrus. One of the things that Cyrus does, because he's not himself a Babylonian, he is a Medo-Persian in that kingdom, he lets the Jews go free, and so he says to the Jews, "You can return to your homeland." So they do. The Jews return to their homeland, and at this time, the Persian Empire, or the Medo-Persian Empire, also known as the Achaemenid Empire, is ruling in the world. And the Jews are living in their land, but they don't have authority themselves, but they are trying to do some rebuilding of what was their homeland. Somewhere around 520, Zechariah comes, and he begins to experience these remarkable visions. Zechariah uses these visions and prophecies to rally the people with the reminder of God's rule and authority in the world, that even though they may no longer be a separate, independent kingdom, even though they may be under the Persian Empire, yet God still rules and God still has authority in the world. And the visions, they present some idea of what God is actually up to in the world. So for one thing, they mention two leaders of the Jews, one by the name of Joshua, and one by the name of Zerubbabel. Joshua is the high priest. Zerubbabel is sort of the political leader of the people. And in these visions that Zechariah has, we learn something about how God is using these men to establish Israel. And so he's showing that he is not yet done with the people of Israel. He is continuing to use them, and he is raising up leaders to do important work for the kingdom. Then we come to Zechariah chapter 5, and Zechariah chapter 5 contains two visions. Now, the second vision is the vision of the woman in the basket. But before we come to that vision, there's a vision that comes first. This is the vision of the flying scroll. And what Zechariah sees is he sees this massive scroll. We're not just talking about a little one that you can open up in your hand. We're talking about a massive scroll, and it is covered. The writing that covers this scroll is written out curses against sinners. So imagine a huge scroll covered with curses against sinners. Now, there are many things that are challenging about this vision as well, but what we do see is we see something clearly, and that is that God indicates in this vision something of his program with the people of Israel. He explains that evil is going to be punished. That's what this vision is explaining to us, that there are curses that are going to come about against those who do evil. These are curses on sin. So there's this note of justice. There's this note of retribution. That all sort of gives the background and the context to what's going on then when we come to this vision itself of this strange basket and this woman who is in the basket. So now we come to the vision itself. But before we talk about that, listen to this. I'll be right back. Now it's your turn. This season at Timothy Talks, the goal is to answer your tough Bible questions. So, do you have a tough Bible question? If so, email it to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. That's timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. Plus, every time you send a tough Bible question, you'll get a chance to win a Bible study resource of your choice so that you can understand the Bible even better. We might devote a whole podcast episode to answering your tough Bible question. All right, so now we are here at the vision of Zechariah's basket woman. I want you to remember that this is a vision, okay? This is not a literal woman. This is not even a literal basket, but he's seeing these things in a vision. Now, the Hebrew word for the basket, it's specifically an ephah. So this is not just any basket, but it's a specific measurement of a basket. It's the measurement of an ephah, just like we have cups, we have gallons, we have teaspoons, we have the whole range of different types of measurements. One of the Hebrew measurements was an ephah. And so there's this idea of measuring associated with it. This basket is not simply any size basket. It's a specific basket. There's this idea of measuring. And we actually find that the Bible does describe God as measuring evil. And you'll see this in a couple different key places throughout the Bible, where there's this idea of God measuring evil, as if in God's way of thinking, evil can be measured. And when evil reaches a certain point, God comes to work and is motivated, as it were, to destroy the evil, as if he does, though, allow sometimes evil to continue to a certain point. So you see this idea, and it just sort of doesn't tell us this directly, but it is this idea of measuring of evil. Now, how much exactly is an ephah? An ephah is actually one of the larger measurements, but its weight varied at different times in history, so we're not completely sure what an ephah is. A good guess would probably be somewhere between 5 to 10 gallons. That's a rough guess. So imagine a bucket that's about a 5 to 10 gallon bucket. And you'll notice, obviously, this is remarkable because this woman is confined in such a small place. So we're talking about a woman, but we're talking about a woman that you can stick inside of a 10-gallon bucket. It's interesting, but this is not necessarily a problem. Like I said, this is a vision. This is not actually a woman. So it is a weird picture, but that's what happens in visions sometimes. You get these weird pictures. But you have this small basket that you squeeze this woman inside of. But you can also understand that because this is a larger basket, it is a 10-gallon, it's not just like a one-cup basket or something, it's a 10-gallon basket potentially, it's one of the larger measurements. So in a sense, you could say you could fit a lot of wickedness inside of a 10-gallon bucket. It's not like a cup-sized measuring spoon. And then you have this phrase that says, this is their iniquity in all the land. That's the translation that I read to you, the ESV. The King James has a slightly different phrase there. It says, this is their resemblance through all the earth. Now, honestly, I don't really know what to do with that, and most people don't know what to do with that. So I'm not going to spend the emphasis of my time there. But then you have this lid on the basket, and it's a lid made of lead, and the Hebrew idea here is that it's a talent of lead. So it's a very heavy amount of lead. In other words, you have this lead weight that's very heavy. We're not just talking about like a plastic lid on top of this basket. We're talking about a heavy leaden lid that pushes down to keep everything in it. And then, of course, there's that thing that seems to be interesting where he thrusts the woman down into the basket, and then he thrusts the lid down on top of the basket. Here again, we have an interesting clue on what's going on. It seems to be a sense of struggle. And it seems like there's this sense of God's power, this angel who represents sort of what God is doing in the world, this angel is using this power to confine wickedness. So if we take the angel, what he says, that this woman is wickedness, God's power is confining wickedness within this basket under this weight, even though there is a struggle. So to sort of think through this maybe a little more, imagine you have wickedness in the world, just in general, there is evil going on in the world, and yet we see that God has the power and the ability to control this wickedness, even to limit this wickedness, to keep it within bounds. So there, even right there, we see something useful that we can learn from this challenging section of the Bible. Then you have these two women come, and they have wings, and the wind is in their wings. Now, again, what exactly does that mean? Well, it seems to have the idea of speed, probably. When you have the wind in your wings, sort of the wind is sort of pushing you along, it's filling your wings, you probably get this idea that whatever these women are doing, they're doing it quickly, they have success, it's going well for them. And in particular, we're told that the wings that these women have, they are the wings of storks. Here again, it's just a little clue, but in the Old Testament, a stork was one of the unclean animals. You don't want to be around a stork. You don't want to eat a stork. You don't want to touch a stork. And the fact that these women have the wings of storks may be saying something about them as individuals, that they are not good people, that they are in some way connected with evil. And so what they are doing, don't view it as what they're doing as being a good thing. It is under God's control, but yet it's not necessarily a good thing that's going on. And then at this point, they pick up the basket, they carry the basket away. And Zechariah asks an interesting question. So let me just ask you at this point, what question would you ask? If you see this vision, an angel is right there, you see this vision, what question are you going to ask? Well, I'll tell you some of the questions I'd ask. I'd be like, okay, what does the basket represent? What do you mean that the woman is wickedness? Why is there a woman inside of such a small basket? I mean, I'd be asking these sorts of questions. These are the questions that come to my mind. Zechariah doesn't ask those questions. He asks, where are they going? Okay, they're taking her away. Where are they taking her? Evidently, that is the important question to ask. And I'm trying to, as we're going through, looking at these tough Bible questions, hopefully not only are you going to take away some answers, but maybe even this could be helpful for us as we think through how to ourselves approach difficult Bible passages. One of the things when you come to a difficult Bible passage, look for the clues that are already given to you. Okay? So we don't know a lot of things, but what we should know is where this basket is going. That's what Zechariah wants to know. In other words, that's a clue. Pay attention to that. That is important in this story. That is sort of the crux of the story, where the basket goes. And what we're told, the angel says, well, they're taking the basket away and they're going to a land called Shinar. They're going to put the basket down on its base, build a house for it, and put it there. But they're going to this land called Shinar. Well, where is Shinar then? That's a good question, isn't it? Well, Shinar is the land of Babylon. It's the same place. So Babylon is in the land of Shinar. So they're taking this basket full of wickedness to Babylon. Now, immediately, as soon as you hear that, that should spark a lot of thinking in your mind if you have spent a lot of time in the Bible, especially in the book of Revelation, because you know that there is a lot of connection with evil and with the city of Babylon. But this evil, this wickedness, is being taken to the land of Shinar, which is the place where Babylon is. Now, he doesn't say Babylon, and I think there's a reason for that. The first time that we find this word Shinar comes very far back in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, at the very beginning. And Shinar is the land that's referred to as the place where the Tower of Babel was built. So even though he could have said it's Babylon, and that would bring all sorts of images and associations to our minds, he doesn't say that. He says Shinar to bring another set of images to our minds. They're taking wickedness to the same place where Babel was set up. Remember again, Babel is also a place where the people of the world come together to build a tower that reaches to the heavens in order that they will not be scattered over the face of the earth because they're being disobedient to what God said. God said, go out and fill the world. And they say, we don't want to be all over the world. We want to be in one place. And we don't want God to rule over us. We want to be ourselves independent of God and able to make our own decisions. So they build the Tower of Babel in the land of Shinar. And this basket of wickedness is going to that very place. Now, there's also this interesting thing about building a house and setting on the base. And it's really not clear. There's mostly what we have to say about this would end up being speculation. But I will say that there is potentially this idea of a house could be like a temple or a place of worship. It doesn't necessarily have to be a dwelling place per se. And then the idea of setting on a base could also have worship implications. Okay? I don't want to go too far with that because it's not clear. But it's a possibility based on, as you read through the Hebrew Old Testament, you think through how these words are used and what that means, that is a possibility that they could be setting up some sort of worship center almost for wickedness. Again, all of this brings to our mind so much biblical symbolism and imagery. And in particular, again, you go back to the book of Revelation, actually go forward to the book of Revelation, and you see a woman who personifies the anti-Christian system. She is everything that fights against and hates Jesus Christ. She is called the great whore, the great prostitute, and her name is Babylon. Again, Babylon, the very city in the land of Shinar. So, simply thinking through this, you have a lot of connections. Wickedness placed in a basket under the control of God, taken to a distant place, far from the land of Israel, but in the land of Babylon. What are we to make of this? Well, several things. Like I've already pointed out, wickedness is under the control of God. He controls it. He constrains it. We don't have to be afraid of evil in this world as if it is out of control, because it's not. And then you have this removal of wickedness to the land of Shinar. Not only does God put his limits and control on evil, but he constrains it so that he can destroy it. And he also, though, he gives evil a degree of freedom in the world. It's not going to just remain. Wickedness is not going to remain in the basket in Babylon. No, there seems maybe even this idea of it having great power and authority in Babylon. But evil, though, is constrained. Here, what seems to be going on, again, remember, Zechariah is promising that God is at work in the land of Israel. And while he is here in this land, he's having this vision of wickedness being sort of bundled up and bundled off to a distant land, a distant place. This doesn't mean that evil is gone from the land of Israel. Obviously, that's not what it means. There's still bad things that happen in the land of Israel and evil people still doing things. But you sense, you get this picture that the spirit of wickedness, this overwhelming evil, this spirit of and power of wickedness in the world is constrained and removed to a distant place, a distant land, and God is restraining the work of evil for a time. So the Jews, they have much to do to rebuild the land of Israel, and yet it's almost as if God's saying, I'm taking this powerful wickedness, this spirit of Antichrist, as it were, away from you for a time to give you success in the work that you have to do. Now, judgment is coming. Judgment comes actually in the very next chapter in the book of Zechariah. But here God is restraining the work of evil for a time. It's not eliminated, but we're going to see, as we continue to read through the Bible, especially the book of Revelation, this problem of evil is ultimately dealt with in Revelation. So in Zechariah, wickedness is taken away to Babylon for a while, to the land of Shinar. In Revelation, it's going to finally be dealt with once and for all. Even today, we can still pray for God to restrain evil, to hold it in bounds, to throw it in a basket with a heavy lid on top, so to speak. And the main point then seems to be this. God is giving his people a time of respite, but he has not removed yet the great evil world system. It still exists. It has a house. The time has not yet come for it to be gone. That evil continues in the world. It's associated with Babylon. But the geographical place, the latitude, the longitude, that's not the problem. Babylon, or the land of Shinar, it's something more than just a place. It's a system. It's the anti-Christian system. In other words, it's a kingdom, a power, a sort of world force, and it's gearing up for battle And it's not until we come to the book of Revelation that we finally read of the finality, the totality of this battle, and the ultimate victory that God has against evil. Until then, we just have to realize we live in a world that's a battleground. And so praise God if wickedness is in some degree confined to other places. We can praise God he's sovereign over wickedness. And ultimately, I think we can praise God for the cross because that's where the power of wickedness is ultimately broken. But the cleanup operation continues, and there may still be much more fighting, for all we know, before it's finished. Certainly that was true in the time of Zechariah, and that may still be true for us today. But we serve a God who has control over evil, and who will ultimately bring it to its final conclusion. Thanks so much for joining me. It's great to have you, and I want to invite you to join me next week when I'm going to ask the question, and try to answer it, does Jesus know? There's some strange passages in the Bible that seem to indicate that Jesus doesn't know certain things, but how can he not know things if he is God in the flesh? If you've not already, let me invite you to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed today's show, it would mean so much to me if you would share this show with your family and friends. Well, thanks so much for tuning in and listening, and God bless.